The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab number 417 for Sunday, September 16th, 2012.
Greetings, folks, and welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab. The show where you send in your questions, you send in your tips, you send in some cool stuff found, we provide some answers, as well as some tips and cool stuff found of our own, and together, the goal is for all of us to learn something new, many things new, each and every week that we get together here from Durham, New Hampshire, here in the well-lit TMO Towers East. I'm Dave Hamilton.
What's going on? Can you hear this chaos here?
I can, right. I can, John. But are you recording for a live studio audience or something?
I think I have one. So here in Fairfield, Connecticut, John F. Braun. But this is probably the first time. So I have wonderful neighbors. And apparently one of my neighbors is having some sort of youth group gathering here on a Sunday evening. And it's right now 9 Eastern here. And there are howls of... And shrieks of, I don't know what it is, because I'm not them.
Right. But it sounds like joy. I hope it's joy.
I didn't see any bloodshed. It sounds like everybody's having a good time. They, you know, dug a hole in the yard and there's a fire and
awesome.
A movie's going and.
I am honored that you had the dedication to do the show when you could be next door enjoying the fire pit and the movie with all the 12-year-olds.
Really not my crowd.
Yeah. Oh, well, all right. Then good. Then we're doing the show.
Maybe after we're done, if they're still, you know, at it, I may recruit some new Mac Geek App listeners.
Ah, there you go. Right.
Always. I would guess at least one or more of them. I mean, you know, the cool kids these days have Apple products, right?
I think so. So I do want to say hi to all of our people in the chat room. We've got a record crowd in there tonight. I can't even count off the top of my head how many people we've got in the chat room in the stream, macgeekgab.com/stream. And, you know, John, it's been another crazy week for me, entirely my own problem and my own fault. But I did a two-day round trip to San Francisco on Tuesday. I came back Wednesday, and if memory serves, it was a blur, but if memory serves, I attended the Apple event in the middle there on Wednesday morning. And which I'm sure you've all.
The 12/5 event, right? Or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Right. Yeah. The iPhone 5 event. Right. But yeah, that's right. The one with the invite that said 12 and 5 and all that stuff. That's right. And then I got to have some hands-on time with the three new devices after the event. Actually, four new devices if you count the earbuds. In fact, they sent us with a set of those.
Really?
Home. Yeah.
Wow. You know, if you did that sort of thing, Dave, I would think you should probably record that sort of thing and maybe publicize it. Wouldn't that be cool?
Publicize the event?
Oh no, your experience. I thought that's what you were getting at.
Oh well, yeah. So I figured since I've had the opportunity to hold these things, I figured I'd just run through that quickly here. But I will say, and I've got an iPhone 5 on order because I have that kind of problem. the iPhone 5, it'll be here Friday, just like it's supposed to be. The iPhone 5. It actually, of course, it is taller, right? The screen is taller and the device is taller, very slightly taller, but it is taller, but it feels lighter. It feels smaller in my hand. And I think by definition, it is smaller, right? Because it's less mass in total, but comparing the two, it's lighter, same width, thinner. And then, of course, a little bit taller. But, I turned it on and I started messing around with it. And that was fine. And then I saw that there's another row of apps, right? There's five rows of apps on the home screens, and it's like, okay, that's fine. I mean, I noticed that, but I didn't really care. Navigation around it was the same because it's the same width, which is great because, you know, you can still move around with your thumb. They didn't make it wider, so you're forced to, you know, really stretch or anything. Very, very, very comfortable in the hand, more comfortable than the iPhone 4. Because the glass back on the iPhone 4 kind of feels sort of slippery and the 4S, but this one has the aluminum back. So it's I liked it. And I was like, well, the screen, that's nice. I'm sure it's good that it's bigger. And then I launched Safari. And, you know, here's the thing. When you're in Safari on your iOS device, the top of it, you know, there's X number of pixels that are taken up by the, you know, the carrier bar with the time, and then the top of the Safari thing with the URL bar and the search. And then at the bottom, there's a certain number of pixels that are taken up by all your little navigation. And then your web page fits in the middle of those. Well, with the new iPhone screen being taller, all the extra pixels go in the middle. So it's almost like you've got 25% more room. It probably is 25% more room. And, man, I mean, it was like a whole new window to the web opened up for me. I only spent like, I mean, I messed around on the iPod Touch, which has the same screen too. Maybe grand sum total, I spent 4 minutes browsing the web on this thing. I mean, it's just not that much to do. And there were other people and I didn't want to hog the thing. But ever since then, my iPhone 4 has felt too small when I'm browsing the web. It's felt tight and cramped and all of that. So I'm eager to get this five on Friday. I really loved the new Nano though. I don't know what your feelings are on this. The Nano, I think on Apple's campus, the word Nano means experimental iPod that we don't really have another category to fit it in. Right. Because it changes every year or two. The thing is radically different. It's not like they iterate on it and it changes a little bit like, you know, like the iPhone or even the iPod Touch. The Nano is a completely new device every time they roll one out. And I love that. I think that's cool.
I think they give it to the interns. Like, all right, kid, here's your project.
Sure.
Seriously. I mean, it was rectangular, then it was square, and then right. It was this, and then it was that. And it's like, what, where, you know, it's got a radio, it's got, you know, yeah. Nike stuff. I mean, it's got all sorts of kind of, yeah, let's put that in there. Just see what happens. No, I'm kind of, you know, I never thought about it, but the thing is, I have a number of them. And yeah, every one of them seems to take a little, you know, right or left turn there. And it's like, no, let's add this unexpected thing and kind of,
yeah,
which, you know, actually from, you know, the Apple, you know, just what Apple does thing, it's like, well, that's cool. All right. So you're innovating, you're coming up with what you hope is a feature that people will like, and
right.
You toss it into the next Nano.
Yep.
No, I never thought of it that way, but no, I like the way you presented that is that, yeah, it's kind of their playground.
It's their, totally their playground. Now this new one, I really like the way it feels in my hand. And I've got fairly big hands. I don't have thick hands, but you know, I've got long fingers. But it really fit nicely in my hand. And but it feels it's not running iOS. I need to state that. Well, it's not running iOS as we know it. I'm almost certain that it's running some scaled down version of iOS. But it feels like an iOS device. In fact, it even looks like one. It's got a little home button. You know, where we're used to the home button being, it's got the little shut off button where we're used to the shut off button being, it's got the volume controls again, where we're used to having those. It's very much like the, you know, the iPod Touch Junior kind of thing. But it's got that Nano interface where you're just swiping around. Obviously you can't install apps on it that we know of. And I don't think we can, you know, I don't think that'll happen, but it's a very comfortable device. I watched a little bit of the Lorax on it because they had that preloaded onto the one I was messing with, and video looked clear. It was actually fantastic. You could totally sit on an airplane and watch a movie on this thing. You probably wouldn't because, you know, I certainly wouldn't because I've got an iPad now. But But you could, but certainly, you know, on the back of a bus or even in the front of a bus, or on a subway car in any of the seats, front, back, or middle, you could watch, you know, and that's where I imagine people are going to wind up watching video, or kids, you know, on car rides or whatever. It's a good, you know, cheap way to get movies in people's hands. So, I liked all the stuff. And it's very interesting. The aluminum backs on these things makes such perfect sense. So... it's good. Any questions on the events or anything like that?
I was going to say, I mean, anything that can prevent people from interacting in, you know, normal social venue is good to me.
That's right.
Just kidding.
I will say that the new headphones, the ear pods.
Oh yeah. Ear pods. Right. So now they've reclassified them or.
Well, they're new and they're definitely different from the old ones in a good way. I think I got them. They handed them to us as we were walking out. And so I put them in my bag. I kind of looked at it, whatever. I put it in my bag and then went into the hands-on room. And then I packed up and I went to the airport because my flight was not that long after I got out of there and, you know, uploaded some pictures and then I was done. And so I got on the plane and, you know, we got up to 10,000 feet and I thought, perfect time to take these things out. So I take them out and I start opening them. You know, the guy next to me is like, whoa, what are those? He's like, are those new headphones they announced today? I'm like, yeah, man. And so I, you know, open up the box and I put them in, really comfortable in the ear. Now I have to state, I expected to hate these things out of the gate because I'm an in-ear headphone freak. I wear custom fitted earphones. I probably have 8 sets of custom fitted earphones that I all use for different purposes. I'm using Westones right now, but they're custom fitted for my ears. They seal out everything. I'm very, very used to that. So headphones that don't seal always feel too loose to me and they don't sound good to me, especially on an airplane. And that was very true for me when I turned these things on. I couldn't hear any low end. You know, the noise of the plane drowned these things out. All I heard was like, you know, real sparkly, kind of crinkly high end stuff. I'm like, ah, well, whatever. So I rolled them back up and put them away. And I watched my movie with my other Futurisonics earphones that I used. And then the next day I thought, well, I should try them again in the office. And I was totally, totally blown away. Really good low end sound, round, full low end, good high end. It had a little too much high end for my taste, like probably in that like 6 to 12 range. It was a little growly, but that's a personal preference thing. I found that I was, you know, once I put them in and I kind of got a tune going that I knew, I totally lost myself in the music, which I think that's a good testimony to the fact that these things, they sound good. I shook my head all over the place. Violently even to try and get these things to fall out. Cause the other ones would fall out. Like when you, you know, look the wrong direction or opened your mouth the wrong way, these would not, these stayed in really, really nicely. I really liked them. I mean, listen, will I use them? No, because I have all these other things and I'm an audio freak, but these are better than good enough. And it's nice to see Apple including decent earphones with the world's most popular music players. Finally, you know, these are enough that most people probably will be very happy with them unless they have specific needs. If you spend a lot of time on airplanes, I talked to John Gruber about it. He actually emailed me from the plane and said, you know what, dude, I'm actually hearing it fine. Now, I don't know if, you know, how close he was to the engines or anything at that point in time. But you know, they might work for you on the plane. They didn't work for me, but that's okay. So, you know, but it's good. It's way better than what we came from. So it was good. And it's $30, you know, or free if, you know, included with new devices, but $30 if you just want to buy them out of the gate. So is it time to move on here, John?
Yes.
All right. You know what I want to do? I do want to talk about our first sponsor, which is Barebones. Barebones.com, the makers of BB Edit. They've been making BB Edit for more than 20 years. BB Edit is a fantastic text editor for the Mac. Obviously, like I said, they've been making it forever. Brilliantly executed, really simple. It's smart enough to know what language you're typing in, programming language, that is, and it will color code what you see on your screen. It doesn't change the files on disk. The files on disk just stay regular text files, but they color code it so that, and they add formatting options so that when you've got code up there, functions are set off a little bit differently. It matches parentheses, which is really important when you're doing programming. You can actually double tap on one, an open or a closed parenthesis, and it'll match the other one so that you know where you're tied up to. And that's really important when you're programming. But you don't have to be like a totally geeky programmer to love this thing. You can use it with, if you're just, if you have your own website and you're doing some HTML stuff, even real simple HTML, it's got some drop-down menus that allow you to create HTML tags right there in inside BBEdit. It's got an interface with an FTP server. So you can open files over FTP and they act just like they're local on your disk, which is great because if you, let's say you have a Dreamhost account or something and you want to edit some files there, you go in and you set up your Dreamhost FTP server that they give you. And then you go into BBEdit and you say, I want to connect to this FTP server, and you open a file and you make an edit and you hit Command S for save, just like you would if it was saved to your local disk. But instead, in the background, BBEdit blasts it off to your FTP server and then you just load it. So you can do this kind of real time editing. Very, very cool stuff. I use it to do word counts. I use it to do sorts of text. So if I need, if I have a group of text that I need to sort, I can put it in there, sort it up, and you're good to go. It works in Mountain Lion, and you can go to barebones.com and get a free trial. And when you're ready to buy, $49 either at barebones.com or in the Mac App Store. So check it out. BBEdit from barebones.com. Now, John, I think it's time for Terry, don't you?
Absolutely.
All right. Terry writes, I'm having some hideous issues with my Magic Mouse on my Retina MacBook Pro. This is exacerbated by having two external monitors for a total of three. And then he sent us a picture of his workstation setup, which I actually want to publish on TMO. It's, but, and this is relevant, I think, to the question. It's this beautiful, I mean, it almost looks like it was carved out of a tree. It's this multi-layer thing, but it's all wood and it's shellacked really nicely. And he's got like different layers of this printer on the bottom. It looks like a tree in his house. It's beautiful. It's cool. I mean, you know, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, but I thought it was cool. So he's got his two monitors, his MacBook Pro. And then he says in system preferences, mouse settings, I've got my mouse tracking set to full speed tracking. Regardless of whether the external monitors, one or both, are connected, the mouse is incredibly laggy. And as an example, if the pointer is on the extreme left edge of the MacBook Pro, I move the mouse a full wrist pivot and the pointer has moved maybe a third, maybe a half of the screen width. I pick up and reposition the mouse repeatedly to get the desired location. Of course, with two screens now, I'm swiping and swiping and swiping and have to use my whole arm. Do you have any suggestions to help? All right. So I think there's two things to look at with the mouse here, John. It's either bad hardware. I mean, it's possible that the mouse is shot, but I've also seen it, right? All of these mice, they don't have balls anymore. There's no roller ball rolling across your desk like it used to be. And that's a good thing because it picks up dirt and you got to clean it all the time. It's a big mess. But with certain desk surfaces, you still need a mouse pad because the mouse is reflecting a light off of the surface of your desk. And it's entirely possible that the mouse just cannot track on the surface of your desk. So you might need a mouse pad. And the way you can try it is even just put a piece of like a magazine down or newspaper or something just to be different than the surface of your desk. And I've totally seen that. And, so my guess is that's what it is. And if it's not that, then maybe it is, you know, a bad mouse. But try that first. Any thoughts, John, before we move on to
Trevor? Oh, boy.
I thought, these first five or six were going to be quick ones, but go ahead.
Yeah.
They never are.
So what occurs to me is, yes, I agree with you, is that the current mouse technology typically uses a camera. And so what it does is it takes a picture of whatever surface is under the mouse and then takes another one and says, hey, what's the difference? And as I think you pointed out, Dave, with most surfaces, that this is something that, that helps you determine, have I moved from here to here?
Right.
Because they're taking pictures really quick. So think about, well, yeah, that's basically what they're doing. They're taking lots of pictures very quickly. And if you look at two pictures, you can tell using computer magic or algorithms or physics or magic, whatever.
Above.
Yeah. You can say, oh, I'm moving in this direction now. That's cool. But if you're on a surface where there is little or no texture, like here's one for those people that have optical mice, which is probably most of you versus ball mice, put it on a mirror.
Oh, yeah.
You'll have some fun. Or anything. Typically, I think a lot of surfaces where the top of the surface is a very reflective glass, either a mirror or just some sort of glass. Some optical mice, and I've actually played around with this, but some optical mice are smart enough to even figure that out. But I think what you said, Dave, makes sense. I think you were suggesting that, all right, if it's not working on the surface that you're on, put something underneath it. The more texture, the better. So even a piece of paper, if you look at a piece of paper under a microscope, there's so much happening there to these cameras and the mice that, yeah, it can tell which direction it's going. But if you have something like a sheet of glass, there's really not a heck of a lot there for you to say, which direction am I moving? So the other thing that occurs to me, Dave, with the Magic Mouse is, of course, you always have. And looking at the setup here, I just clicked on it now. I see potentially 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, lots of things here. The thing is that the Magic Mouse, like a lot of Apple wireless input devices, is using Bluetooth. What is Bluetooth? Bluetooth is RF. What does RF do? Well, RF tries to battle with all the other things that are near your computer and try to get things done. But if there's emissions from something, which, and I see here, so I see he has a speaker, there's some mystery device there, there's a candle, there's a, I see so many things there. I see a wireless phone. Okay, right? Do you see that?
Oh, yeah. Okay, sure.
And a few other things. And then I see a bunch of wall warts in the wall here. I see maybe a strip. So anything that's plugged into the wall or has a battery or a power source has the potential to generate RF. And it still kind of aggravates me that Bluetooth and Wi-Fi, certain flavors of it, and other things like wireless phones all occupy this 2.4 gigahertz range. I guess the advantage is that it's unlicensed, or I guess it's less of a headache for people to put things there because it doesn't require as much paperwork to get licensed and all that stuff from the FCC or other regulatory agencies. But the thing is, everybody's on this frequency, including the mouse. So my guess, Dave, would be that that may be what's happening.
That could be. Yeah.
And that it's interference. And so communication is not totally lost, but there's enough stuff happening that it's doing its best. And the result is reduced the response time.
Yeah.
Or lag.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. It could be any of those things. So, you know, to test that, take the MacBook Pro and go somewhere else with it where you're further away from all of these other sources of RF. And, you know, if the mouse pad concept doesn't work. Cool. All right. You ready to move on to Trevor here, John?
Yes, sir.
All right.
Guess what? You know, I got it in front of me.
I know.
Are you amazed? All right. Yeah. So here we go. From Trevor. Yeah, I'm getting in the groove here. Hello, John, Dave, and occasionally Pilot Pete. This is an alert that has been starting to pop up, and I can't figure out why. And of course, he sent a screenshot, and we're going to tell you where to send all these things shortly. But right now, he has a 13-inch MacBook Pro.
Well, tell him what the alert says, since you told him that there was an alert.
Oh, well, the alert says, and it comes up with a 8-sided red thing, like a stop sign, and an exclamation point saying, because a USB device was drawing too much power from your computer, one or more of your USB devices have been disabled in the bold text. And then it says to prevent damaging your computer. Well, that's getting kind of carried away, but yeah. The USB device drawing too much power has been disabled. Other devices may have also been disabled. When you disconnect the device drawing too much power, your other devices will be enabled again. Yeah, well. So, but this actually led me to an interesting thing, Dave. So the thing is, every USB device So you have two types of USB devices, one that you plug things into and the devices that you plug into them.
Fair enough.
And the devices that you plug into are hubs, typically. Yeah.
And yeah. In fact, even the ports on the side of your keyboard are treated as hubs.
Right. Or hubs are just a USB plug. Let's call it that. But usually they're called hubs. And the thing is, every hub has a power requirement. And in this case, on the Mac, or at least the in general, it's expressed as current, because current is an element of power. Power equals current times voltage. So, but USB likes to express the capacity of a USB either bus or hub or device in milliamps. And so here's the thing. So how can I find out, Dave? You may be asking yourself, how can I find out what these values are on the USB things in my Mac? And here's how you're going to do it. Well, you're going to go to the Apple menu. About this Mac would be the quickest way, and then more info, and you will see then a little button saying system report or system info or system profiler. It's been called many things in the past. And then you look at the hardware section of this, and then you look at USB. And what it's going to do is list all of the USB buses and hubs in your computer. Now, when you click on one of these, and some of them are, well, actually all of them, well, it depends on what device you're talking about, whether a Mac Mini or a MacBook Pro, a portable or a desktop, but it will always list the device. And when you click on it, at least in the case of hubs or buses, one figure it will list is current available. And that is the amount of current, and that's measured in milliamps. And a common value is usually 500 milliamps. Now, the thing is also, if you have a device plugged into the computer, it will also report how much current it needs in milliamps. So here's the good part. So if you're having problems with devices fighting with hubs or whether it be in the keyboard or computer, or your desktop computer, whatever, to try to track this down, get the list of the power, how much power a hub or bus can provide, and then get the list of what your devices need. And this is when the thing kicks in. If a device comes and says, hey, I need more than is available, and the computer, for the most part of the OS, trusts the device, then
sure.
If it needs more than is available, it's going to give you a message like this saying, sorry. Now, maybe it actually, you know, I was kind of I thought that was kind of neat here, is that it seems that the OS tries to make a smart decision here, saying, oh, OK, well, you know, because something else is kind of causing problems, maybe I can let this device do something temporarily and then get rid of it later. Or if you do a restart or something like that, it sounds like there's a little intelligence here, but my advice when getting this message is try to plug. So number one, do what I suggested, is try to get the list of how much current in milliamps. Again, milliamps, how much each can provide. And then how much, as long as you can plug your device into something, it should report how much it needs. And then, you know, create yourself a chart here. And it could be. Now, the thing that I ran across, Dave, and this was unusual. So I decided to plug my iPhone in.
Okay.
And it came up with an extra setting. So yes, we're getting to the end of this here, but then this is an extra topic, is that I plugged in my iPhone and it listed not only current available and current required, but extra operating current.
Oh, interesting. Is that to charge the battery, maybe?
Yes. So Apple, it looks like, so I looked up the setting because I'm like, wait a second. You know, I was just looking to kind of wrap up this issue here, which we need to do to move on. But
yes,
I plugged in a device to get the stats here. And I'm like, wait, what is this extra operating current item that I'm seeing the device list? And apparently Apple cheats a little bit, or maybe not cheats, but they make a provision here. Apparently there are some devices which can request, and as you sense, Dave, I think the iPad is the largest offender here, is that a device, it sounds like it's maybe an Apple thing here, is that, so number one, a port I think can advertise it has extra operating current, and a device can also ask for extra operating current. It can't be guaranteed that it'll get it, but if it can, like, for example, I know a lot of things, and you're an iPad type of guy, is, I guess, one of the problems with the iPad is that not all chargers or USB ports or whatever port you're plugging it into are necessarily equipped to service it to its full needs. Yes?
Right. Well, it depends. If you've got a 5-volt or 10-volt charger, it'll charge faster with one than it will with the other. That's right. Yeah. All right. I guess we move on to Alan. Right?
Okay.
Right? Are we done?
I think we answered it. Okay. Yes.
Cool. All right. Alan, take us away.
Hey, John and Dave. This is from Prattville, Alabama. I just needed a question. Is there any way to lock the volume when I put my iPhone down? What I'm having a problem with is every time I put it in the holder, it seems to lose its volume, and I can't hear it ring after that. So is there any way to lock that down? Here's where you cut me off.
All right, Alan. So it's important to understand that the iPhone has context-sensitive volume settings. And what that means is, let's say you just have your iPhone. This is true of the iPod Touch as well, and the iPad. So you have your iPhone, and it's not connected to anything, and it's using its own speakers. It will have whatever volume setting you set, and you can use the volume controls to set that. As soon as you plug in headphones, it now goes into headphone volume mode, and that has a different level. It's the level that it last was when you plugged headphones in. So if you adjusted your volume, it's going to remember that. And that's independent of the volume, the speaker volume that you're going to get when you have your headphones unplugged. The same is true if you connect it, let's say, to Bluetooth in your car or Bluetooth earphones or whatever. That's going to have a different volume setting that it also remembers. And dock connector devices are going to have independent volume. So my assumption here is that, unless there's something that is just wrong with your device, but assuming everything's operating properly, what I believe is going on is you have your volume set to zero when it's in the cradle, when it's in docked mode. So what you need to do is you need to change it when it's in docked mode. That's the only way to do that. If you pull it out of the dock to change it, it's going to go back to undocked volume. And then, of course, that's not going to help you. So put it in the cradle and then, wake the device up so that it's in interactive mode and crank up the volume. And that should do it for you. I think that's going to solve your problem. If it doesn't, I've seen sound problems happen on the iOS devices before. And sometimes you just need to do a backup, restore and start kind of fresh. Brian Chaffin actually at TMO just had one of those issues, and it was the only way to solve it. But short of that, I think you're just stuck in context sensitive volume land. So that, hopefully that'll do it. And now Robert
has a problem.
Hopefully it's a quick one. Because we're in the quick ones category here. No, this isn't a quick
one. Oh, we are.
Right, that's what I thought. But maybe, but that was just my, when I put the agenda together, I assumed these were going to be quick. Little did I know, you were going to
talk about Trevor. Well, we could say that this, so let's see what this happens. One's, well, this one could be an onion.
Everything can. Go.
But basically what we got here is a problem with, let me make sure I got the right one here. Yes. Robert. Mm-hmm. Robert has a problem in that he gets a dialogue here. And I think this is the gist of the problem here. He gets a dialogue saying the name of your computer, blah, 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 paren 856, close paren, is already used.
Robert's MacBook Pro paren 856. Right. Yeah.
The name has been changed to, and it gives it another name. What is going on here?
Yeah, I mean, it gives it another name, but you got to hang on. The dialogue says this. The name of your computer, Robert's MacBook Pro with 856 in parentheses after it, is already in use on the network. The name has been changed to Robert's MacBook Pro with another number, 937 in parentheses next to it. So it's maintaining some part of the name, right, John? But there's this number in parentheses that keeps changing or increasing.
Right.
Right.
And the best I could find here, so where is this name set? Well, this name is set, last I checked, they said if you go into sharing.
System preferences, sharing. That's right.
And computer name, that's where this name comes up. And normally it's assigned, and I believe it has something to do with this whole Bonjour technology or zero conf stuff. Or maybe TCP/IP, but basically what I found, Dave, so I did a little digging, and I've never run into this, but maybe I don't run a large enough network. But the only thing I could find is searching around here is that this tends to come up when, and that's why I think it's not totally a Bonjour thing, but I think it's also a TCP/IP thing, is that sometimes if you have machines that grab a IP address and then resolve part of that to a Bonjour thing, like a machine name, if that doesn't get released properly, and that's where I'm bouncing between the two here. And what I saw were suggestions that DHCP, if DHCP, which is TCP/IP technology, where a computer comes along and says, "Hi, I'm a new computer. Can you give me an IP address?" It's like, "Yeah, sure. Here you go." And you can have this for this amount of time. Sometimes that mechanism gets screwed up. Somebody may hold an address when they don't need to, or it's not available when they need it. And I believe in some cases what happens is Bonjour and DHCP get intermingled and confused. And the what happens is that when you try to assign,
I'm gonna stop you because I know I've been through this. I know the problem. So
I was hoping.
Yeah. What happens is, it is a Bonjour thing. Apple takes all Apple devices on a network, but mainly your routers. So if you have an Apple router, it will, when you go to sleep, your Apple router will remember your device's name. So like if you have an iMac and it's sharing files, when your iMac goes to sleep, all the other Macs on your network magically can still see that your iMac is available to share files. And if you try to connect to it to see its files, the machine will magically wake up and show you its files. Now, this is not your iMac doing this on its own. This is OS X on your iMac doing a very cool thing that somebody in the chat room called Sleep Proxy. I don't know if that's the official name, but I like the name. What it does is when your iMac goes to sleep, right before it goes to sleep, it says, "Hey, are there any Apple routers on the network?" And if one says, "Yeah, I'm here," it says, "All right, you act as you, as though you're me on the network." Right. And so when your iMac's asleep, it's actually not your iMac broadcasting its own address. It's the router broadcasting it. And when you try to connect, the router says, "Hang on one second." And it goes and wakes up the iMac with the wake over Ethernet packet thing, and then kind of steps out of the mix and lets your iMac answer the query. That's where this stuff starts to happen. It won't happen if you don't have an Apple router on your network, at least from what I've found. I don't think machines keep it. But what you were talking about is the reason, or is the way to solve it. It's DHCP is the problem. If your machine wakes up and starts getting a different address for whatever reason, that can then cause it to appear to your computer like there are two versions of your computer on the network, one with your name. And then it says, "Well, I can't register Bonjour, so I got to change the name." And the way it changes the name is it puts a parentheses with a 1 or a 2 or a 3, or in Robert's case, you know, like an 867, because it's happened so many times. So the way to solve the problem, and I think this is where you were heading, John, was doing, setting the IP address, especially if your computer is always on your network, assign it either a static IP address, which you would do, by static, we mean you pick an IP address and your computer stays with that IP all the time. You can do this one of two ways. Number one, you could go into network and instead of saying, configure IPv4 using DHCP, you can say configure using manually or using DHCP with a manual address. But a better way to do it is to set a static lease for it on your router so that every time your computer connects to the router, it hands it the same IP address. And that, I think, will mitigate this problem. It's certainly what solved it for me here. I had this problem with my iMac in the house, kept getting kept getting new addresses. And as soon as I went to static, it just went away. There, it kept getting new names. I don't know if it kept getting new addresses, but I assume it did. So, yeah.
That's awesome, because that's exactly what I was going to suggest people do.
Okay. No, that's the answer. And that's it's good practice. Yeah.
Now, brings up how should it, DHCP is trying to do the right thing here.
Right. It's just two things.
A little battle.
It's DHCP and Bonjour fighting with each other because of this proxy thing. It's because there are two devices on the network that are broadcasting the same name. I mean, that's what's happening. It's just, you know, so that's how it goes.
And, you know, the other thing, Dave, is the way to solve most problems is just turn everything off and on again.
Well,
your router, your computers. I mean, just shut them all off.
Yeah, but that may or may not solve the problem. I don't know. It might.
Well, actually, if a lease is still outstanding, somebody may insist on holding on to it. So
Right.
All right.
Moving on to Carter, and I think we've got a link to a good primer on setting static leases on your Apple router. It's pretty straightforward, but it's easier to look at screenshots while you're doing it. So I think we've got a good primer on that we'll put in the show notes for you all. And now I'm just looking where we are time wise here. All right. Now I want to talk about our second sponsor here, John, but this is a different sort of thing. The name of the company is BitSuites. And one of the founders, Corey Emdick, emailed me about a year ago, and he said, you know, I want to tell you a story. And he said, I started listening to you and John about 5 years ago. I might have the number of years wrong, but he'd been a listener for a very long time. And he said, you know, I didn't have a Mac. It's, you know, because of your show that I got a Mac. And then once I got a Mac and got into all this, that sort of headed me down the path of learning iOS development. And he says, now I have my own company that does iOS development. It's him and his partner, Tom, his business partner, Tom. And he says, I thought that a great way to thank you and John for getting me into this was to start developing a Mac Geekab app for you. And I'm very happy to announce that today that Mac Geekab app is live in the App Store. Now there was a lot more development done on it than what started, you know, about a year ago with Corey on his couch. In fact, I think the whole thing was basically torn apart and started over. Michael Johnston, who does the show notes, you do the show notes, John. He does the AAC conversion for us. We actually brought him in to do all the icons and the graphical elements. And really, he helped us with almost in a consulting way and with getting the workflow of it down. And I'm really happy with it. You know, like anything 1.0, there's more features that we want to add. But out of the gate, I'm really, really happy with what this thing does. Now, you can find it in the App Store. It's $3.99. It does, of course, streaming of the episodes. Doesn't have live streaming yet, but it will. That's one of those very, very soon kind of things. But it'll let you stream the episodes or download them and play them from the device. Either one works. It allows you, while you're playing an episode, you can save a bookmark at any point in any episode, and then you can go back to your bookmarks later and revisit that topic. So, you know, we'd always heard from people that said, yeah, you know, I was listening in the car and I couldn't remember, but there was this one thing I knew I wanted to check out. Well, now you've got an easy way. There's a little button. You hit it. It saves a bookmark. You can add some text or not, but it'll save the location for you and you can come back to it later. You can also send feedback to John and I. John, I did say it. And
how would you do that, Dave?
That's right. Well, what you would do is, so you can do it in general in the app. There's just a link to contact us, but you can also do it while you're playing an episode. And if you do that, it will tag the email that gets sent to us with the episode and the timestamp. So John and I know exactly what you were listening to, where you were, and the chapter name, right? So if you've got the AAC version, we know exactly where you were, and you can send text as you always can, or you can record an audio comment right there inside the app and then send it off at, with, you know, via email to us. So, I'm just looking to the features because I want to make sure I don't miss anything. We've also got push notifications, so we can push out a notification to you when a new episode is in the stream or when a, you know, live stream kind of thing comes up. But we'll experiment with that too. So we're really, really stoked about this. Like I said, we've been working on it for a very long time, and the folks at BitSuites, Corey and Tom, they have been so great to work with. Then they are a custom app design house. And if you need an app done, these are certainly some guys to consider. Definitely reach out and talk to them. They're so easy to work with, and it was great. I just send an idea to Corey and he'd say, oh yeah, we can do that. You know, and bam, it was like right there in the app. And, you know, even when I've worked with a lot of designers over the years for programming projects, for websites, and this year I've had the opportunity to work with really, really good ones. But some designers get a little finicky. You know, you call them up and you say, hey, I want to change the way we're doing this. And not only did Corey not get finicky about it, he would embrace these changes and he'd say, oh, that's a great idea. Let's change this. And he'd be throwing out, you know, weeks worth of work just to do it the right way. And I think that's the most important part, is as soon as we realized that we were doing something that we wanted to change, there was no, you know, emotional attachment to the fact that it already worked this other way. It was like, yeah, all right, fine. Throw it out. Let's go. You know, let's do it the right way. Let's make sure we get it right. So you can check it out. It's in the App Store. Of course, it's Mac Geek Gab. And let us know what you think, and let Corey know what you think too. They're good folks. So anything to say there, John, about the new app? I'm so happy it's finally out. It's great.
Can I get a code?
Yes, John, I sent you a code for the app.
You did? Oh, mm-hmm. Good. Okay, I'll try.
That's right. And we gave out pre-show. We gave out some codes here in the chat room too. So, and we might give some, you know, we might have one or two left that we can give out post show here in the chat room. So there are benefits to joining the chat room here. And like I said, you know, that's one of the very next features that we want to put in here is the ability to stream the show live on Sunday nights. So, or whenever it is we do it, but typically Sunday nights. So, all right. So thank you, Corey. And thank you, Tom. And thank you, Michael. It was a fun process, and I look forward to continuing to iterate. All right. Carter writes, I have a question you may be able to give me some guidance on. I have a 3.5-inch Western Digital Baird hard drive, which I connect to my MacBook Pro using a Voyager dock. The drive has performed just fine until today when it refused to mount in the dock. It would show up on my desktop as a recognized drive, but it no longer does. I thought maybe there was something wrong with the dock, so I put a second drive in it. The second drive mounted just fine. I tried mounting the first drive a number of times, but no success. Possibly the first drive is defective and should be discarded, but I don't want to discard it if I can do something to get it to mount again. Is there any software which may help to analyze the drive even though I can't mount it? Do you know of any techniques I could try to get it to mount? Okay, so the first thing to do is to see if the computer sees that there is a drive there. So what I would do is connect the Voyager to your Mac, then go into, it used to be System Profiler. Now it's System Information. And you can get there by going to the Apple menu and going to About This Mac and doing More Info, or the shortcut. Well, there's two shortcuts. One is to hold down the option key and go to the Apple menu, and it's the first option. It changes to System Information, and that'll launch it. Or you can go to the Utilities, Applications Utilities, and launch it from there. But then click on whatever bus you have connected to your Voyager. So if it's USB, connect it, you know, click on USB in the hardware section. If it's FireWire, click on that. Whatever it is, click on that. And take a look and find that Voyager device, because you want to see what that thing looks like when nothing's plugged into it. Okay. Then plug your good hard drive in. This is just to give yourself sort of a frame of reference. Plug your good hard drive in, let it mount up, let it do all its stuff. And then go to the file menu in system information and choose refresh information. If you leave it on whatever USB or FireWire, it's going to refresh that view. And you should see a hard drive appear kind of underneath that Voyager thing. That will tell you that the system sees it on a USB level. Understand, just get yourself a frame of reference of what that looks like. Then eject the good drive, put a bad drive in, or what you think is this bad drive, and refresh this list. See if the drive shows up as, again, just at a hardware level. If it does, then there might be some hope. If it doesn't, then maybe try the drive in another enclosure. But, you know, if the computer can't see it at the hardware level, there's not a whole lot you can do, I don't think. Once you see it there, then you can start to see if you can experiment with it. Disk Utility will allow you to try and do repairs or various things on drives that aren't mounted. So that would be one thing to start with, although Disk Utility is not the greatest. So you might need something like Drive Genius or even Disk Warrior, although I really have kind of leaned toward Drive Genius as my go-to app for this kind of stuff, my go-to third-party app anyway. So that's the quick answer there. You got anything to add before we move on to Everett?
So some of the things I like here. So one would be something you always want to check for with the device, especially with this enclosure where you're plugging and unplugging. Look for a bent pin. You know, so get your and I'm serious here. Get yourself maybe one of those.
If it's a SATA drive, there's no pins.
Well, there always are pins. So I'm just suggesting as a general troubleshooting thing, if one drive works and another doesn't, look on the drive itself and just see, just make sure the connectors are nice and clean and not bent or anything like that. The other thing is that they do have, and I'm trying to remember our favorite kit here. They do have other kits that hook directly to drives, not just this Voyager thing. I think Newer is the one that I like to use, and I still have one of these that it goes to SATA and some of the older interfaces to a USB 2 connector. And I think it's always good to have one of those. And I think
the Voyager is the same thing. It's from Newer technology.
I understand.
Okay. I mean, it's the same thing.
What I'm saying is just have another connector here.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Okay. Yeah.
Except for the Voyager, you know, one of the ways to solve problems is keep swapping out things until
absolutely
things work again.
Yep.
So what I'm just saying here. So one, yeah, it could be a bent pin on the drive, or it could be something wacky in the Voyager. Who the heck knows? Though,
yeah.
You know, if it's worked before, probably not.
Right.
But have another, you know, connector as well. I think that's all I got to toss into that one.
All right, cool. Yeah, that Voyager is actually a pretty cool thing. It's essentially a universal drive adapter type of thing, but it's like a half enclosure. You actually drop the drive down into it.
Right.
So you could use it to me, it's built for more long-term use than the universal drive adapter, which is just this thing that,
longer. I mean, the drive is still exposed, which to me is like, you know, displays the people that you have a little bit of daring.
That's right.
Yeah, but like, that's a good look, my drive is partially exposed.
I taunt the gods or I partially taunt the gods. That's right. all right. Let's see. All right. We got a quick one from Everett. We can certainly do that. I'm not sure how far we're going to get here in this show, but go, Everett.
Hello, John and Dave. And thanks again for doing the show.
Thanks.
I have a question about iTunes and the file structure it has. Is there a way to put either a shortcut or a symbolic link instead of the folder that holds my movies and TV shows, so that way it's not taking up space on my drive and I can have the shortcut symbolic link point to my time capsule or the drives that it's connected to? Since this is 94 gigs of TV show and about 100 gigs of movies, I definitely want to get that off my drive. Thanks, and please send me back your replies and ideas. and hope this will help anyone else who is struggling with disk space.
Yeah, absolutely. This is a common thing. And there is, you can do it. I believe you have to do a symbolic link, not a shortcut, to make this work. So if you're comfortable doing those sorts of things and know that you've got to sort of keep this in the back of your mind while you're managing stuff, yes, you can do that. But there is a piece of software that we've mentioned a couple of times called TuneSpan. It's in the Mac App Store for $15, $14.99. And it does, it is built to do exactly what you're looking to do, and it manages it for you. I have not used it because I honestly, it didn't exist when I had to solve this problem originally. So I just went the route of having a big honking drive that I put everything on. I also don't keep movies in my iTunes folder because we stream to our TiVo and not via Apple TV, at least not currently. But TuneSpan is built for doing exactly this. So that's actually the method I would recommend on this one. So, all right.
You think so, huh?
I do. Do you have another method?
Tons.
Okay.
So, and of course, when you launch iTunes, if you hold down.
No. Hang on. But he wants to have his music in one spot. I know where you're going to go, and it's good to tell people about this, but he wants to have his music in one spot and his movies and TV shows in another, but all accessible simultaneously.
Ha! Well.
But go ahead and tell him about what happens when you launch iTunes with the option key down.
Okay. Because this could solve a problem of a smaller scale.
Right.
But yes. So, of course, if you launch iTunes, as with many of the Apple utilities, try it, folks. You can't hurt anything if you do this. But if you launch a lot of the Apple apps and you hold down the Alt or Option key. So, for example, iTunes. What happens if you hold down the Alt or Option key when you launch iTunes? It will come up and say, choose iTunes library. And you get not one, not two, but three choices. So one is quit. That's boring. One is choose library, which asks you to identify a library. And then the third one, and this is kind of the cool part. And this is the one where you could develop a very coarsely grained media management strategy here, and it could solve the problem, Dave.
Sure.
And you could create two libraries, one with your movies and one with your yeah. In left field here, but it's a very caveman.
Right.
But yeah. And the third option to finish here, so you get quit, choose library, or create library. So you could create a new library and then use that one to manage certain types of content. And then when you want to deal with other types of content, you could then choose the other iTunes library, and you could put it wherever you want. So just saying, this is the cheapskate built into the Apple app way of very coarsely managing different libraries, and that you create different ones on different locations and you hold down the option. But it's certainly not as elegant as what you suggested. So,
yeah. TuneSpan is. Yeah. Agreed. Cool. All right. Let's jump to our tips. Let's do a couple of tips here and then let's talk about cool stuff found before we wrap things up. All right, John, not you. In fact, we have a tip from you. But listener John writes, one of the things I've heard a few times during the show is with regard to the library folder in Lion and now Mountain Lion. The fact that is that it is no longer readily visible in your home folder. Holding the option key in the Go menu reveals the library in the Finder. But for those who would like to make it a more permanent solution, I came across this tip. He says, I think I found it on TechRadar. He says, in the terminal window, type chflags space no hidden space home or tilde slash library. And that's it. That's all you got to do. Chflags space no hidden space and then the path to your library folder. So for those of you comfortable with the terminal, that little tip will make your library unhidden forever, or at least until the next OS update. I'm not sure. It depends on what the OS updates do. But that's thanks, John. That's a good tip. John, did you have something to tell us about the installer log? Did you? Are you ready on that one?
Yes, I do.
Oh, good. Okay.
But I also have something else to tell you. Cool. The other thing I like doing, Dave, for the library folder is to navigate to it however you figure out how to do that in the Finder, and then put it in the sidebar. So I actually have both my user and system library folders in my sidebar, which I find very handy because it tends to migrate from OS upgrade to OS upgrade. So,
yes,
I thought I'd toss that out there. Is that once you find that, grab it, put it in the sidebar, and then it shouldn't go away. And if it does, then
no, I do the same thing. I've had mine in the sidebar, and it persisted through the Mountain Lion updates. So, yeah, good stuff.
Excellent. So that thwarts Apple's attempt to hide things from you.
Like yeah,
the library folder.
Well, you know, I don't want to spend too much time editorializing on this. Because we've got other stuff to do. But I think in general, it's a good thing that they hide it from you softly, right? I mean, it's not difficult to get there, but you're not going to stumble in there accidentally. And my guess is that was their intention with this. So, yeah.
I agree. And actually, you know, even, you know, some people may know that I'm actually a Windows developer type of guy in my alter ego. But Windows does that too. It's like, system. Are you sure you want to go here? Are you sure you want to see what's here? And I actually like the way Windows handles it better, rather than just not showing you. It's like, you know, this is. I don't know if you're ready for this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas Apple's just like, all right, we've decided you're definitely not ready for this. Unless you listen to Mac Geek App, we're not going to tell you where this is. So the thing I want to point out, because I recently did an installation per Dave's recommendation to upgrade my machine to Lion. Right? Oh, no, yeah. You said not
to. I said not to upgrade. I said to skip that and go to Mountain Lion. But anyway, your tip is valid. Your tip is valid, even though your decision is not.
Well, I wanted to go through the same pain that some of our listeners do. And so far, actually, Dave, it's been pretty uneventful, and that I haven't had any catastrophes. But the thing I wanted to offer is that when you do run the Mac installer, while it's installing, and I found this could just fuel days, weeks, or months of geek joy here. Now, is you go to the window menu and you say installer log, and then you will get some choices, and one is show all logs. You can watch in real time, because typically when the Mac is installing stuff, it's really kind of boring, is that if anything, you get a pretty animated menu bar. But if you go to this menu, window installer log, it shows you basically coming from the Unix guts, everything that's happening with installs. And actually I found it handy, especially if you think that there may be a problem with your media, is that the log will tell you what the heck it's doing. And actually, I had a case where I think I had some bad media because it kept sitting at, it was like processing foreign language, you know, package, whatever, .pkg. And it was sitting there for hours on the same, several minutes on the same file. And I'm like, you know what? I think my media may be damaged. And I think, as it turns out, it was. So,
interesting.
Again, window installer log, and it's a play by play is what it's doing at the very lowest level, and it's really quite fascinating, I think, and it really will help you understand if you want to. But doesn't everybody?
Yeah.
What's happening when you're installing your OS, and what it's doing, what it's replacing, what it's moving around? I just totally geek out. And also, it's better than just watching the pretty graphics.
That's cool. I'm going to do that.
Sleep.
I'm going to do that from now on.
And then the final thing, I'm sorry, is that typically after you finish an install, a lot of times, I think normally the OS will sit there and say, all right, I'm going to reboot or do something if you don't touch a key. But what you can also do, if you catch it at the right time, is you can take this log and save it to your hard drive. And that, I think, is an excellent postmortem for you to find out. Yeah. If at some point you think there was a problem with your install, it'll tell you. It could tell you, you know, this file was bad, I skipped it, sure, or whatever. It goes into a lot of detail, and we can't, certainly couldn't cover it. We could have an entire show.
Right.
About what the installer's doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. Cool. All right. Arthur had a note about something we talked about, I believe, in show 416. He says, I was listening to 416 and I wanted to comment about the current application window losing focus. I've been seeing this issue since Leopard. I believe that was Dave's question from last show. He says, if I remember correctly, the login window process, all one word, login window process, will report an error about focus. I would recommend looking in the system log in the console for error messages. To fix this issue, I found that launching the screensaver or putting the Mac to sleep and then waking it up fixes the issue. So I've been setting up all of my users with a start screensaver hot corner to fix this issue. And what he means by hot, that's cool. Thank you, Arthur. That's good. If you want to do a hot corner, I believe, where is that now in Lion or Mountain Lion? I don't think it's in the desktop and screensaver. Help me on this, John. Is it Mission Control? No, it's not. Oh yeah, it is. It is in Mission Control. So you go into System Preferences, you choose Mission Control, and down in the lower left, it says hot corners, and you can actually set, various different actions to happen when you hit those corners. And so one of them is start screensaver, and you can have it launch Mission Control or launch pad. There's various things you can do. So go ahead and check that out. Just be aware that anytime you float your mouse into one of these corners, it will do what you've told it to do. So what I like to do with my hot corners, and here comes the tip on top of the tip, is when you pull up that menu, of course, you just select things, but you can hold down modifier keys. So you can make it so that, you know, you have to hold down the command key and go into the upper left corner for screensaver to happen. And that will keep that from happening every time you float too far and go to your Apple menu and suddenly your screensaver's up and driving you crazy. Or you can make it your option key or the shift key or all three, or I think control as well. So that's my tip for hot corners, to actually make them useful without getting in your way. So thanks, Arthur. That's good stuff.
It's hot.
Yeah. Ken has an anecdote, and here we go. He says, I wanted to send a quick comment about your advice on the Find My Mac option and guest accounts. He says, as you pointed out, the guest account is not needed for Find My Mac to work, John, and you did point that out. He says, however, disabling it may render the service useless. Here's why. If your Mac is ever lost or stolen, it will not be able to connect to the internet in order for Find My Mac to work unless the guest user is allowed to log in and connect to a Wi-Fi access point. I believe this is why Apple turns the guest user account on by default with very limited access to Safari only. In John's testing after disabling the guest account, I'm guessing his Mac was located in a place that was already connected to the access point. I had this unfortunate experience with my iPad. My first gen Wi-Fi only iPad was lost, and I was confident that I could find my iPhone, which was configured correctly, to locate the lost device. My iPad, however, was configured with a password to log in. After many failed attempts to locate the device, it occurred to me that unless someone was able to log in and connect to the internet, it would not be able to find it. That meant that it would only work if it were present at a location where it had previously established a Wi-Fi connection, such as my home or office. I hope this tip may be useful to any users that may be considering disabling the guest account after enabling Find My Mac. That's actually a really good point. Yeah. So it makes sense. Thank you, Ken.
I actually think the whole thing's lame now.
All right.
Because I verified this because I wasn't sure. Now, so to me, it was, well, do you enable guests? So maybe sneakily in the background, it'll log into guests, then log in and reveal your location if you ask. Or is it just that I think, as you suggested, Dave, and the thing is, it wasn't entirely clear to me that this was the case, because the way I set up my machines is that I typically don't show choices for logging in, is that I just show
the login box,
username and password prompt, which if you don't know that guest is enabled. And actually, I kind of was scratching my head because, you know, I was researching this a bit, because I'm like, wait, what's behind this? I mean, what's the deal?
Sure.
And the deal is, if you're at the login prompt and you enable a guest user and you don't give it a password, and when it asks, if you set up the computer to not give you a choice of people to log into, you just type guest, it'll log in.
Right.
And then activate Find My Mac. So to me, and the thing is, I believe there are some third-party pieces of software do not require you to. So that's why I said it's kind of lame, is that you have to log in, even an account like Guest without a password, or that you leave your account logged in so that you can locate the machine.
Right.
To me, it's kind of lame in that I think I'm almost positive there are solutions where you don't need to have a login in order for them to find where you are.
Well, so, no,
I mean, it's
actually,
better than nothing.
Those won't work
really?
If you're using File Vault because the machine's locked down. So you need that guest. If you're using File Vault, you really do want that guest account on
right.
because it's very, very limited. It doesn't even decrypt your drive. It launches the guest account from the recovery partition. So your drive is still encrypted, but that's why you need a recovery partition in order to turn on Find My Mac, right? If you don't have the recovery partition, remember we found that Find My Mac wouldn't turn on. That's why. So it, you know, if you install third party software, you know, to go and do the same thing, it won't be running if your Mac if your drive is encrypted with File Vault. Yeah. So. All right. Couple of cool stuff found before we have to wrap this up. One of them was very, very timely this week. Our friend Barry sent me or sent us a note about a new app that he found. And the app is called Window Seat. It's an iOS app. It works on iPhone or iPad. And the idea is while you're in the air, it would be in an airplane. It would be cool to know what you're looking at out the window. But of course, you're not allowed to use GPS devices while in midair. And unless the pilot tells you where you are, you really have no idea. So, on some planes, you get the little map. Virgin and JetBlue, I think, let you see that. But, you know, otherwise, and there's no way to see what points of reference are around. Well, that's what Window Seat's all about. It's pretty cool, too, because about an hour before your plane takes off, the pilot has to file a flight plan with the FAA, and the flight plan details which waypoints the plane is going to kind of check in through throughout the flight and the path that it's going to take from your, you know, from where you're coming from, where you're going to. And so just before you get on the plane, you find your flight in the app. And you can even do this like while you're sitting on the plane before they've told you to, shut everything down, and you pull it in. And it says, okay, let me know when your flight has started. And of course, you can't have, you gotta let it know when you've had wheels up, right? And obviously, you're not allowed to have your iOS devices out at that point. So they say, just remember, look at your watch when, you know, wheels up. And then at 10,000 feet, you launch the app and you tell it, yep, here's when wheels are up. And it just uses the predicted time of your flight in the air to track where you are. And it shows you like a little map. And what's really cool is if you zoom in on the map, it has all these little points of interest and you can tap on them and it'll give you like little, you know, a little blurb about each little point of interest that you're passing by. And it actually can be really cool. Honestly, I found it a fun way to pass the time. I wasn't even in a window seat, so I couldn't really see out to look at any of these things. But it was fun to know, like, oh, hey, we're passing over this. What's this? I didn't know a lot about Wyoming, but I was able to read about a couple of different landmarks over, you know, while we were passing over Wyoming. And it was just like, hey, that's a cool way to spend the time. Yeah. So it works on iPhone or iPad. It's not 100% accurate because it doesn't actually know where you are. It's just predicting. And they say, look, if the pilot tells you that you're passing over the Grand Canyon right now, you can go in and adjust where you are in the air to match that. So it's Window Seat. And I'm trying to think, did I put the price in? I think it was $3.99, $4.99. I will find it here. It's $4.99. And that app works on iOS, on iPhone and iPad. So yeah, it was fun. I liked it.
Wow. Are you sure Wyoming exists? I've never been there. So
actually, my daughter's been there, so I'm pretty sure it exists. Yeah. A lot of people go to Jackson Hole, you know.
She was probably lying.
It's possible. All right. Let's see. Ken's got one.
Hello, John and Dave. This is Ken from Kailua. I was just listening to Mackie Cab 415 Cool Stuff Found and realized that there was something that I used a lot that I don't think I've heard mentioned on the show. And that I'd like to share. If you, like me, like to fool around and really can't stay faithful to one browser, you might find a problem is having all of your bookmarks available to you in the browser that you shifted to. So if you've been using Safari for a long time and decided to shift to Chrome, or
vice versa, or if the Firefox or whatever, it can be a real nuisance as you realize that you've left all your bookmarks behind. A couple of years ago at Macworld, I discovered Bookmaster, spelled Bookmaster from Sheep Systems. It's not terribly expensive. I think it's about $15. It's been a while since I licensed it. And it is very simple in terms of use, a little menu bar item. And it uses Dropbox, and it might use other things as well, but it uses Dropbox, in my case, to store the entire file of the bookmarks so that it can be accessed, and it automatically updates in the background to any Mac you're using it with. It's a terrific little thing, and works exactly as one would hope. It's not that simple to set up in the first place, but the instructions are very clear and easy to follow, so that it turned out, although it looked complicated, to be very simple. Anyway, there you go. Share that, I hope. Aloha.
Thanks, Ken. And he did send in a correction. The price is $22.95, not $15, but thank you for that. And lastly, but not leastly, Robert sends in a cool stuff found. He says mail notifications in Mountain Lion is useful, but it doesn't show any body text of an email. Herald is an app that pops up a subtle window when a mail message comes in. It displays the from to subject info, but also displays the body of the message and instantly allows you to trash, file, respond to, or archive the email with one click. And that is pretty cool. And it looks like there is a it's free. So we'll certainly put that in the show notes for you. And with that, John, I think we're getting pretty much to the end of the show here. It's time to bring the band in. I stopped thinking a long time ago. It started to hurt. But here's the band, and so
if you had to thaw them out.
If you wanted to contact us, the first thing I'd recommend is go get the Mac Geek Gab app, because it tags everything in a great way for us. It really helps us collect everything, and it makes your submission much easier to process and reply to and know what's going on. So the Mac Geek Gab app in the Mac Store is certainly my preferred way of having you contact us. But if you don't have access to the app, there's other ways, too. It's like if you're on your Mac and you want to email us. John, how would they email us from their Mac?
Well, first you need to set up your email program, and that involves all sorts. I'll cut to the chase.
Please do.
We assume if you're listening to this, you have operational email. And if you do, and you have a question, you would send it to feedback@macgeekgab.com.
That's feedback@macgeekgab.com.
This time I agree with you, Dave, except you missed one part. It's feedback@macgeekgab.com.
That's right. Premium@macgeekgab.com is the address to use if you are a premium member. We are very close on having the new premium backend engine rolled out, and we will send out a note. I'm thinking it's going to be Tuesday, but hopefully you can hold me to that. You can call us at 206-666-GEEK, which, John, is
433+5.
That's right. You can see the show notes that John prepares here at MacGeekGab.com, the all-new MacGeekGab.com, which is, of course, part of the new Mac Observer design. It's got a great little podcast player right there. It's good stuff.
Very nice.
Very nice. You can find us on Twitter. The show is MacGeekGab, of course. He is John F. Braun. I'm Dave Hamilton. The guy that I would love to have sitting to my right but has been notably absent is Pilot Pete. And, of course, TMO pushes all the headlines out to Mac Observer. Facebook.com/MacGeekGab.
I didn't
publish the live show there tonight. It's been a crazy week. My apologies. I've barely been home. In fact, I'm hoping to go and even maybe spend some time with my wife while I finish watching the Patriots game, which is on TiVo still. So those of you in the chat room, don't tell me what happened.
This is crazy.
It's crazy. And then, of course, speaking of the chat room, MacGeekGab.com/stream. typically 9 p.m. on Sunday night. 9 p.m. on Sunday nights.
That's what you think.
It's easy for you to say.
I have work travel coming up.
You're going to Bridgeport.
I'm either being rewarded or punished. All I know is I'm being sent to a place in New Jersey I've never been to, and that quite honestly frightens me.
Did you watch The Sopranos, my friend? Just make sure you're nice to everybody.
Woke up this morning.
That's right.
You and I started watching that when you and I were up at
my dad's condo in Vermont.
Yeah. And we watched the first episode, and
we got hooked.
We got hooked, and I think you watched the last one, right?
Oh, I watched it all the way through. Yep.
Don't stop believing.
Don't. That's right. Yeah.
I don't think that spoils anything, really.
No.
To me, it was like, what? Yeah. Is that the ending? Are you kidding me?
Well, sorry. It was the ending of that, but it's also the ending of this. We want to thank Michael Johnston, of course, from the We Have Communicators podcast. He also converts this to AAC. He also did all of the great graphical work and navigation work on the Mac Geek app. We want to thank Corey and Tom from BitSuites, of course, for all their work on the app. It's humbling how much time and love and effort they put in. So thank you guys. Of course, CashFly, been a partner for a very long time. CashFly.com providing all the bandwidth for us. We love those guys over there too. And wouldn't be doing this without our sponsors as well. BB Edit from Barebone Software. Text Expander from Smile. And of course, Gazelle. Now's a perfect time to use Gazelle to sell off your old iOS devices. And of course, all of those people help. But none of it would be possible without all of you. So thank you so much for everything you do. I hope you enjoy the app. Let us know what you think of it. Have a great week. And don't get caught. And like the app. This show was
made up.